This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and it's Friday, time to review a week possibly unlike any other in the history of modern American politics.
What a super Tuesday! We have to make America whole.
Make America great again is going to be much better than making America whole again.
He's not of the temperament of the kind of stable, thoughtful person we need as leader.
I'm not willing to concede that the Republican nomination is over.
We have a long, long march to the Democratic convention in July.
People say everywhere I go, you seem to be the adult on the stage.
This little guy has lied so much about my record.
Here we go, the person
he has lied.
Oh my goodness, let's attempt to make sense of it all, if that's even possible, with our Week in Review panelists. Joining us this week is Richard Tessay, former Republican Minority Leader of the Massachusetts State Senate. Richard, great to have you back.
Happy to be here.
Also with us is Shannon O'Brien, former State Treasurer and State Senator. She was also the Democratic nominee in the 2002 Massachusetts gubernatorial race. Shannon O'Brien, great to have you back as
well.
Thank you. And this week, because it's so special, we needed the help of Anthony Brooks, WBUR Senior Political Analyst. Anthony, great to have you as well.
It's great to be here. I'll try to offer what help I can.
Okay. So let me just lay down the rules here. No calling each other names, no referencing body parts, no, I don't know.
I was waving my hands over here to guess you have you guess what I mean by it. So,
all right.
No one can see that on radio.
So in debate style, just jump into the fray. Like, if you had to give me a 5-second analysis of this week's this week in American politics, what would it be?
Civil war. On the Republican side.
As a Republican, I'm watching that debate last night. Embarrassing, for sure. And obviously, there's a lot going on right now. I think there's a realignment going on. You know, for all the criticism that Trump has, it's very interesting that he is bringing thousands and thousands of new people into the party. Here in Massachusetts, we had a record turnout for the Republican primary, 20,000. According to Bill Galvin, Democrats changed to either independent or Republican to vote in the primary.
We'll talk about
a lot of things going on.
Yeah, we'll talk more about the specifics here in Massachusetts in a minute because it is interesting. But Shannon, I just wanted to get a quick thought from you here.
I had predicted that if someone like Jeb Bush or John Kasich were not the person who won the Republican nomination, that this could be the beginning of the end of the Republican Party. I did not have any concept of the kind of schism or civil war that would be created when someone like a Donald Trump takes the helm of the party process this year. I think it's a very troubling development this week. I certainly think that it's going to be something that's going to have an impact for years to come.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Well,
to me.
Let's play a little bit of tape from the GOP debate last night, the Fox News debate. And this is a piece of tape which I guarantee people you've already heard, but it's worth playing it again because it just, I think, exemplifies the tenor of what the race has become, at least on the GOP side. So here it is.
He hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee.
So I have to say, I try not to be a prude, but this is politics.
Do you know what was disappointing?
I thought this was a family show.
I know, a family show.
What was disappointing that they did not cut away to Melania with a grin on her face. That would have sealed the deal. But it didn't happen, so I'm not sure.
But I'm really wondering, you know, when you listen to a cut of tape like that, what are, I don't know, elementary school teachers telling kids about the American political process? You know, I have a 4-year-old son, so this issue wasn't coming up. But I'm just wondering, I mean, do you have to tell your kids you can't watch the Republican debates because they're going to be talking about stuff that's just inappropriate?
It is really troubling. And I also will say, for a moment yesterday, I tuned into the Trump response to Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothered me, even though I'm far from being, you know, a Trump, you know, sympathizer, but how many people, you know, were thrown out of that speech because there were people who were causing a ruckus there. Now, there have been people who have been thrown out just for wearing burqas or different things like that or hijabs, but it bothers me that it continues the coarsening of the political dialogue. The whole thing is just not good news for the American people.
And this has been going on for a long time. If you were a kid growing up with Bill Clinton, I don't know how you censored any of the stuff that was going on there at the time. And it's, you know, obviously a bad development, you know, to I mean, the first thing I thought of, if you had kids watching that debate last night, what do you do?
Can I just say, though, I mean, I take your point because there was a lot of talk and discussion and investigation around Clinton's personal life, his sexual life, but I don't recall Bill Clinton himself, on the debate stage, language is insinuating the kind of thing we heard last night.
No, and I agree, but I'm just saying we've coarsened, our politics have been going downhill.
Well, if you go back a few generations, they were talking about people's extramarital affairs. So it's that's not new. And you know, Donald Trump's extramarital affairs haven't even really been talked about yet in this campaign. But it is the fact that the person who wants to be the leader of the free world, not talking even about his you know, misconduct as a husband or soon to be ex-husband, it's the way he is speaking to the American people. It is the way he is speaking to other countries. I mean, Mexico City actually passed a unanimous resolution saying we want to refuse to let Donald Trump come to Mexico, and they're asking their, you know, parliament there to, or their Congress there to pass something similar.
But
I mean, it's scary.
The way he is speaking to the American people is connecting with a lot of people, and that's, again, record turnout and all these primaries. Who would have ever thought that his biggest margin of victory on Super Tuesday would have been here in Massachusetts?
Mm. So, Richard, here's my question. I'm just wondering about this. So, you know, I heard Marco Rubio on NPR this morning refer to Donald Trump as a vulgarian. And Steve Inskeep sort of rightly shot back at Marco Rubio, but you've descended into this mud pit yourself. I mean, how do you justify that? So what about this as a political strategy? I mean, could they have gone a different direction by them? I mean, Cruz and...
Well, you know, I endorsed Marco Rubio, and I've never felt like when I've endorsed somebody that I made a mistake, and I definitely made a mistake, and I know I made a mistake when I watched him engage in the same type of, you know, he started that joke with Donald Trump,
the hands joke.
With the hands joke a few days before, and started all the personal attacks. And, you know, Kasich looked the best last night at the debate.
But is it taking Kasich anywhere? Because that, I mean,
Well, I guess what bothers me is that I think that there is an anger out there, and I think that there is an anger at the establishment, but I certainly reject the fact that you need to stoop to this level of personal attack, innuendo, just crude stuff, yelling stuff. You know, waterboarding isn't enough. We want to kill people. That is frightening, almost fascist kind of language. But I don't think the American people need to be spoken to that way to key in on their anger.
But there are a lot of American people who watch what's going around, happening around the world, people's heads being chopped off. I mean, we're in a very dangerous world, who do think that the policies that the United States is undertaken under the Obama administration haven't been in the best interest of the national
security. Richard, this week I've taken to quoting Abraham Lincoln, because it is the party of Lincoln we're speaking about, and does any of this speak to the angels of our better nature? It does not.
No, but there are a lot of people who have... he connects with
no,
that are very upset
time,
with...
This kind of talk will make us less safe. A number of military leaders recently signed a letter saying that this kind of talk from Donald Trump is not only sickening, it is unconstitutional and will make our military personnel around the globe, as well as our citizens, less safe.
But I do. But just to say, though, like in a way, Richard, to dovetail a point that you were making... Yes, Donald Trump is at the vanguard of the tone that we have in this year's GOP primary. But Marco Rubio has chosen to also follow that same tactic.
Well, that's why I mean, that was his big mistake, and I think that's why his campaign is imploding.
There are continuous opportunities to be an anti-Trump. Right. John Kasich seems to be the only guy who's doing
that. Can I just tell you, though, a lot of the things that we're talking about right now, had Bernie Sanders come out of Super Tuesday, winning most of the states and leading a revolution that was taking over the establishment of the Democratic Party, I think you would see Hillary Clinton and all of the establishment of the Democratic Party desperately trying to knock him off of his pedestal right now, just like they're trying to do to Donald Trump. And to some extent, you know, you got to respect the voters. They're watching this, and they're picking the person they think is the best.
You know, it's interesting that you mention the Democrats, because, I mean, this might be a point for later in the conversation. But one of the things that comes out of this week is, you know, on the Republican side, you've got this anti-establishment candidate, you know, marching ever closer to the Republican nomination, the Democrats, it seems to me, have gone just the opposite direction. I mean, here is the most establishment candidate marching ever closer to the nomination. I mean, it's like a mirror image of what's going on.
I don't want to throw a grenade here at Shannon, but you know, any other election cycle, it would be over. Hillary Clinton would be the president because of the meltdown in the Republican Party. But here you have, you know, within her own party, a significant number of people who won't support her or haven't supported her or supported Sanders. But there's a very good chance that she could be in a lot of legal trouble, if not indicted, by, you know, sometime during the course of this campaign. And yesterday, the federal, the FBI gave immunity to the person who installed her server. And he accepted it. So, I mean, this is an investigation going on, and putting all your eggs in her basket right now, as crazy as it sounds, you know, normally, again, Trump wouldn't have a chance in the world if he's the nominee, but she could be, we could be in an unprecedented situation where the Democratic nominee is in serious legal trouble.
That doesn't bother me. And I think that it is certainly something that, you know, we have to look at, but I'm actually happy that you now have this person who is going to be providing the information that the Hillary Clinton people asked him to provide to investigators, but he had refused to cooperate. And so I certainly think that this is an important
turning
point. But
Shannon, it doesn't bother you that there is the possibility that there could be an investigation?
I think that there have been enough hearings and enough vetting and enough understanding. There certainly has been a change in what the standards are between when she was fielding these conversations in and out on her server, but she did nothing different than what Condoleezza Rice did. She did nothing different than her other predecessors who had computers. And, you know, I just think that this is, and even the people who have been pressing these investigations have acknowledged that this has been done to throw her off kilter and to hurt her chances to become president. I certainly think it's something we need to pay attention to, but I certainly don't think that this is something that is...
There's another interesting thing, though, from the Democratic side, and that is just as Donald Trump is bringing more voters out and Republican turnout is up across all these primaries and caucuses, it's down among the Democrats. And I'm wondering, do you see that as a challenge down the road for Hillary Clinton?
Circuses are way more fun to watch
than, whatever you want to call it, poetry reading.
You know, I mean, but the fact is, you know, it is a circus. We are watching a circus. We are watching, you know, public execution. I mean, we are watching something that is entertainment writ large.
No, and I get that. But my question is this a problem? Does this bode predict some kind of challenge for Hillary Clinton should she become the nominee in November, if there is less enthusiasm among voters,
don't forget that it is still a significant minority of people who are coming out to vote for Donald Trump versus the number of people who are coming out to vote for Hillary Clinton right now. I mean, the absolute numbers of who's voting for her and who's voting for him are different. I cannot wait until the debates between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton take place. I think you're going to see a very different dynamic.
Richard, forgive me for jumping in here. I'm going to let everyone have a chance to make a point here, but I do want you all to know that we had some producers work very, very hard to pull some excellent tape that's going to support everyone's points here. And I do want to play it because there was just so much to listen to that happened this week. So first of all, let's actually hear from Hillary Clinton after her wins in several places on Super Tuesday. And she, in her victory speech, she didn't win every state, but in her victory speech, she turned her sights, it seemed, to the general election. So here's that.
America is strong when we're all strong. And we know we've got work to do. But that work is not to make America great again. America never stopped being great. We have to make America whole. We have to make strong the broken places, restitch the bonds of trust and respect across our country. I believe what we need in America today is more love and kindness.
Okay, and just as a reminder that even though some people may think it's a fait accompli, it is not yet. We still have the remainder of the primary season to go, as Senator Bernie Sanders reminded you, Anthony, this week. Here's that.
We have a long, long march to the Democratic Convention in July. We're going to fight it all the way. We're in it for the long haul. We think that our message, Anthony, that we got to stand up to the billionaire class and create an economy that works for all of us. That is a message that is resonating in Massachusetts. It's resonating all across the country.
Okay, a couple of voices there from the Democratic side. But, Richard, you wanted to have your say a minute ago.
No, I just, again, you know, you're going to be, I know Donald Trump has a lot of negatives. I expect that he's going to be the nominee. But you have Hillary Clinton with negatives just as high. And a lot of people, I mean, can't believe that we've had 20 candidates and it's narrowed down to the two of them who, it's, you know, a lot of people say, oh, this is a question of, you know, lesser of two evils. Well, that's what this election is going to be about. And
well, what I find so striking, so if it does turn into Trump versus Hillary Clinton, I was looking at the average of polls, national matchups going past many months, that's on Real Clear Politics. So Hillary Clinton beats Trump by an average of like 2%. 2 points, 3 points.
That's not a comfortable margin
for her at all. It's not a big margin at all. Sanders beats every single Republican in this average of polls. He beats all the Republicans. Yeah. And the other Republicans besides Trump, Cruz, Rubio, Kasich, all beat Hillary Clinton. Now, I know these are just polls. I know they're supposed to be snapshots of the moment, but these are a lot of polls over a long period of time. I find that
there are a lot of people who just in no way ever they're going to vote for Donald Trump. But there's also an equal number of people who under no circumstances will vote for
Hillary.
Thank
God it's not equal.
No, will vote for Hillary Clinton. And the thing about Trump, I think, that's different than any other Republican is that he can put states in play that haven't been in play since Ronald Reagan was ran, and you know, Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan and you know,
I'm
going to let him finish because the fact is all of those numbers are polls, and what that means is that people really don't know who these other guys are. They know who Hillary Clinton is. They know who Donald Trump is. There was a very interesting television interview. I forget if it was NBC, ABC, but this woman, a reporter, went into a coffee shop in Las Vegas before the caucuses there and literally had a little, you know, a video screen and was showing the faces of all the Republican candidates. There was like one person out of the 15 people that she went and interviewed who even knew who anybody else's face was beside Donald Trump. A lot of this has to do with who you know. People know who Donald Trump is. They know who Hillary Clinton is. And so the generic Democrat, they don't know who Bernie Sanders is for real. You know, they know who he is.
I think they do know who he is because he's doing pretty well.
He's among the Democratic voters.
And the problem with Hillary is that they do know her and they don't trust her. They think she's a liar. And
the fact is we're talking apples and oranges when we're talking a general election and a primary party process. When you're talking to Democratic voters, and the fact is, I applaud what Bernie Sanders has done during this campaign. He is speaking, you know, saying things that need to be said. I think he
That's what people are saying
helped.
About Donald Trump,
I think
too.
That he has
Both of their constituencies are amazingly similar.
My name is Meghna Trakabrati. I'm going to do a Megyn Kelly here, though, and just jump in here and tell the debate to pause for just a second, because I do want to play another piece of tape regarding another very prominent Republican who threw himself into the fray this week. Here it is.
Dishonesty is Donald Trump's hallmark. He claimed that he had spoken clearly and boldly against going into Iraq. Wrong. He spoke in favor of invading Iraq. He said he saw thousands of Muslims in New Jersey celebrating 9/11. Wrong. He saw no such thing. He imagined it. He's not of the temperament of the kind of stable, thoughtful person we need as leader. His imagination must not be married to real power.
So that, of course, is former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney giving a very impassioned speech in opposition to Donald Trump, but he didn't exactly endorse anybody else. Thoughts?
Yeah, I've never been a Romney fan myself. And I got to tell you, watching what he did, I think, degraded himself. He obviously, I think he's doing it because he wants to end up the nominee coming out of a brokered convention. And he's sort of setting things up the best way he can right now to do it. But, you know, if he ever, it boomeranged. If there was anything that helped Donald Trump yesterday, it was Mitt Romney doing that. It's
worth noting that, I mean, this is a political season that just keeps giving us these amazing moments. I mean, the idea of the Republican Party standard bearer, or the former presidential candidate going after the likely future Republican candidate is just, I mean, has this ever happened in your lifetime?
Well, you have never had the future Republican nominee attacking you know, McCain, who was the former nominee, saying that he wasn't really a war hero because he got captured, having him threatening the sitting Republican Speaker of the House, if he doesn't get along with me, he'll pay a price. I mean, I think that you're seeing Republicans who understand the damaging nature of Donald Trump's campaign on the party itself. Now, maybe we don't have parties in the future. Maybe we don't have Republican and Democrat. No. Maybe everyone's independent and we just make this a cult of personality and money. But the fact is, I think that, and I trust me, I'm not a fan of Mitt Romney's either, and I think he probably should have released his own tax returns when he ran for both governor and for president.
You know,
but he's absolutely right. The things that he said about Trump yesterday were on point, and people should be listening to that.
A lot of people felt as though Mitt Romney was a terrible candidate. He let Barack Obama just trash him, didn't fight back. And it's very interesting because most people who analyze the election, the actual turnout, would say he lost because a lot of voters who normally would go out and vote for a Republican stayed home. Now, I'm telling you, those are the people that Donald Trump is bringing into the party right now. So I think Donald Trump is going to be a much stronger candidate than Mitt Romney was.
Donald Trump, Sanders, and Mitt Romney was the wrong candidate for the time. What people are feeling right now is this intense anger at Wall Street, this intense anger that they, even though we just added another 200,000 jobs to the U.S. economy, unemployment nationally is now under 5%. The fact is, when you look at the numbers, the economy has come light years from where it was under the past administration. But the fact is, people are still not feeling it in terms of their ability to purchase. But what Mitt Romney was he was the Wall Street candidate, the first Wall Street candidate after the meltdown. And it was impossible for him to get people to join him because I think that that was the one thing that—and this, I think, is the thing that galvanizes both the Sanders people and the Trump people,
because
is that anger at Wall Street.
Well,
right,
and in fact, I mean, anger because the bulk of the recovery has gone to a very few people.
And who has positioned themselves as the bigger outsider right now? Hillary Clinton, who's giving $600,000 speeches to Wall Street, or Donald Trump, who, you know, is out there really, you know, more of running a Bernie Sanders type campaign than an establishment campaign.
Bragging about how he purchases politicians.
So. I'm just curious I'm trying to make sense of what, you know, I hear you, Richard, to say that this is a play for Romney, perhaps wanting to make a run for the presidency. I'm going to take Mitt Romney at his word, but I'm curious about this idea of it boomeranging. In other words, Mitt Romney as the sort of epitome of an establishment Republican going after Donald Trump. It seems like that is only going to make his followers...
Where's Mitt Romney been the whole campaign? He was thinking of running. He decided not to run. He's been in the background. I could see if he came out yesterday and endorsed somebody, and endorsed Rubio or endorsed Cruz or endorsed Kasich. He didn't do that. You know, it was just like he wanted just to throw... you know, a grenade out there, blow things up.
But on the other hand, it's sort of part of you've got serious talk of a third party Republican candidacy. Shannon mentioned these ex-national security folks from the Republican side, 50 of them saying no to Trump. You've got a dump Trump political committee.
This is a realignment. This election is going to be a realignment. The Republican Party is not going to be the same party it was heading into this cycle by the time we're done. You know, trying to get low-income people into, you know, the Republican Party has always been a big thing. Reagan was successful with the Reagan Democrats doing it. You know, I don't think the party is going to look at all like it does. And I think the Democratic Party is in the same boat, except Hillary has been able to hang on. You know, the establishment's hanging
on. Donald Trump is already printing up those buttons. The uneducated love Donald Trump. So that, I think, is going to be the outreach here.
Working.
He loves the uneducated.
I love uneducated people.
No, let's just say, like, working class people. The Reagan coalition, I think, you know, Trump has a better chance to pull them together. But things are changing, like, right under our feet. Who knows what each party's going to
look like. But as I was saying earlier, I still think when you expose, because I don't think with that cacophony of opponents, when you start looking at the bankruptcies of Donald Trump, when you start running the ads of the small business people who lost hundreds of thousands, if not more, when Donald Trump basically stiffed them in these bankruptcy proceedings. I think you're going to see the, you know, never mind the woman whose house, you know, they tried to take it by eminent domain so that they could build a limousine parking lot.
They're going to be talking about, they're going to be talking about,
but that stuff isn't happening right now.
But they're going to be talking about the Clinton Foundation, all of the illegal contributions that went in there.
I know, the Clinton Foundation that helps Haitian survivors.
I'm just telling you, there's a narrative. There's a narrative, you know, this whole thing that her servers in somebody's bathroom closet in Colorado.
I don't mean to keep being the person who jumps in on
I just
you,
want to say, though, Meghna, that given the debates that we've been listening to, very high-minded debate going on in this studio here.
I'm just saying,
this
it's going to be a scorched earth campaign, and neither candidate, I'll tell you, is, you know, is a perfect candidate walking in. They're both tremendously flawed, and we'll have to see how it
both have very
out.
Entrenched interests in tearing the others down, which actually makes me so honestly, as a citizen, I find it very disheartening. But, well, I do actually want to give us a little bit of time to talk about our hubbubs for this week, because some of these hubbubs are actual, like, news, I have to say. But let's actually start with Richard for your hubbub of the week.
Okay, since it was first built back in 1968, Boston City Hall has long been called an eyesore, and in 2008, Erin earned the distinction of being voted the world's ugliest building. City Hall Plaza hasn't fared much better. Long considered poorly planned, dysfunctional, and a barren area located smack dab right in the middle of the city. Over the years, there's been a lot of talk on and off about tearing down the building, and occasional attempts have been made to liven up City Hall Plaza and make it more friendly and more functional. If you remember last summer, Marty Walsh laid out some AstroTurf and put down some lawn chairs, hoping to create a different vibe over there. These changes, though, will pale in comparison to what a new vendor selected by the city to reinvent the plaza has planned. The Boston Garden Redevelopment Corporation, a subsidiary of TD Garden Owners, Delaware North, are going to spend the next couple of years trying to give the space more of a theme park feel. The proposal that was accepted that they put in is talking about a two-story restaurant and bar, interactive art installations, and a winter skating rink, and an urban beach during the summer months. I don't know what an urban beach is. But best of all...
You're burying the lead, Richard.
But best of all, there's a giant Ferris wheel that they're talking about to create a real circus atmosphere. you know, having the circus right next to City Hall, I don't know if that's a good idea or not. But anyways, who needs the Olympics? Because if you're bored, you're going to be able to go down
because I've visited London several times, and they have a giant Ferris wheel there. It's enormous, the London Eye. It's actually very cool. So I don't see why we shouldn't have one in Boston.
So, no.
All right, it's good.
I just want them to do something that if you're a woman wearing heels, you don't kill yourself
walking
across
the plaza.
Oh, my God, I hate that. So
Shannon, your
hubbub? So my hubbub is not nearly as cheerful and as exciting, but it's very exciting if you are a Democrat, very concerned about the fact that Senator Charles Grassley is refusing to hold hearings to replace the Supreme Court position left by the death of Antonin Scalia. Today, Patty Judge, the former Iowa Lieutenant Governor and the former Secretary of Agriculture, unlike Judy, I'm forgetting what her name is, who did the ads, who talked about doing things to pigs and proved that she could cut pork in Washington. This woman is a farmer. She has her family owns a cattle ranch. Apparently, she's quite popular, and she's going to be running against Senator Grassley. So it's actually going to put a lot more political pressure on him in his home base in terms of holding hearings for the Supreme Court justice.
Huh, interesting. Yeah. Good hubbub, Shannon. Actually, both of you. I mean, it doesn't always have to be fun.
Do you know how hard I work for hubbubs? Do you know how hard
they're
I work?
Hard?
If I can give you one more hubbub. Samantha Mewis from Whitman Hanson High School graduate is now playing for the I did this once on another hubbub. She's playing now for the women's national soccer team has an opportunity. She's has an opportunity to go to the Olympics. We're crossing our fingers that Sam Mewis will be in Brazil. So that's my second hubbub.
Two in 1 day. Oh, I would have saved that for another week.
My daughter wants me to drive down to Hartford to go watch them play.
Well, I'm gonna shift the mood here with mine. Can I go, Anthony? Have you come?
Yeah,
wrap
sure.
us up here. Because I just have to say, in this era of high volume, high energy news, my hubbub is in honor of someone who epitomized the opposite of that. And I just want to play a little bit of tape here to help remember him.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. Three Iranian-Americans...
So, Craig Windham, a familiar voice to any frequent NPR listener. He anchored the NPR newscast for years, was in radio for decades. He died suddenly of a pulmonary embolism just this past weekend. He was only 66 years old, and I never met him personally. Anthony, you and I were talking about filing spots for newscasts with him. I knew him for years.
This is incredibly
but
sad.
A total class act. So I just wanted to read a description of him from Robert Garcia, who's the executive producer of NPR newscast. He said that Craig Windham was one of the best reporters and anchors I've ever had the privilege of working with in 40 years in this business. Beautiful writing, use of sound, his calm, steady, gorgeous delivery all marked the work of a caring journalist who loved nothing more than telling a good story, adding the texture that took you there, and leaving every listener invested in some way, moved or informed. And I just want to say I couldn't agree more. And there is something noble about just cleanly and simply delivering the news in this day and age. And we will miss Craig Windham doing that. That's my hubbub.
Indeed. Well, my hubbub is another passing. It marks the passing today of the great and expressive sports writer and journalist Bud Collins. He died in his home in Brookline. Collins joined the Boston Globe in the 1960s as a tennis writer. He became best known on NBC for his Breakfast at Wimbledon programs covering the fabled British Open from 1972 to 2007. He was known, among other things, for his very colorful trousers and his colorful writing and commentary. Here he is talking about Rafael Nadal's victory over Roger Federer in 2009 Australian Open.
Yes, because he was the victor then, but we found out that the rain, R-E-I-G-N, from Spain has fallen on this concrete plain right here in Melbourne.
So one of the original ambassadors of tennis, Bud Collins, died today at the age of 86 in Brookline.
Wow. And later today on All Things Considered, Bill Littlefield will be remembering his longtime friend Bud Collins as well, so stay tuned for that. Well, Anthony Brooks, WBR senior political reporter, thank you.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
And Richard Tesei, former Republican minority leader of the state Senate. Thanks for being with us, Richard.
Thank you.
And Shannon O'Brien, former state treasurer and state senator, thank you as well. It was great to have all of you this
week.
Thank you. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.